The Bomber Command Tribute. Bomber Command, World War II. 55,573 people who gave their lives in a war of attrition with no thought of submission. Night after night, operation after operation, taking the fight to the enemy without hesitation. With just under 50% losses, they fought and perished for our nation. Hitting many targets, reaching Berlin too, in the roar, bringing down dams, and seeing their missions through. Giving back to Nazism what it had meted out to so many others. The saddest part, the loss of so many fine flying brothers. Flak, Akak, and night fighters, they had to endure it all. The loss of aircraft and limbs, terrible burns, and much more. Immeasurable sacrifices and bravery beyond belief. Giving more than their country asked, the courage never ceased. Wellingtons, Stirlings, Halifaxes, and Lancasters went, diligently on ops to wherever they were sent. With their American allies, day and night, up to 1,000 strong. In the end, good would prevail and triumph over what was wrong. So many crews lost, we should remember them all. The list is endless, so only one I will now recall. PB-304, with its crew of seven, lost on the 30th of July, 44. Now, with different wings, they fly in heaven. The Salford Lancaster, as it became known, came down the banks of the Irwell. Its legend has grown. The boys that lost their lives that day shall not grow old, as long as we make sure their story is continually told. They completed their missions, so let's make this one ours, to remember them and all lost in Bomber Command, through their motto, Per Ardu Ad Astra, through adversity to the stars. The Bomber Command Tribute.
I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're watching The Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guest is Gary Britson Daly, an historian, author, and poet. He's just launched the second edition of his book, The Last Heroes. This interview highlights why it is so important for us not to forget. Gary, first of all, it's such a pleasure having you on my show and having you as a guest. And I bet this is a bit of a change for you, because you're normally on the other side.
I certainly am. And it's quite interesting. I'm normally going around the United Kingdom with camera equipment and the photography gear and going into veterans' homes and all of the manner of venue you can imagine, setting up my equipment and doing the interview. And now here I am for the first time, being interviewed by your good self, yeah.
And it's so lovely having you on the show, Gary. And I'm actually really excited about this interview. And I know there's lots that we want to discuss, but I think the first thing that was really burning, a question that really came to me when we first spoke, and I heard about your mission and what you've done, what I really wanted to understand is where your inspiration and passion came from, from interviewing, you know, World War II veterans.
Right. Well, I was very fortunate for many years, actually for nearly 20 years, to be involved in high-end travel and tourism. So I used to work for travel companies half the year on every conceivable kind of tour you can imagine, overland tours, resort-based operations as a tour manager. I was doing specialist sports activity holidays, historical tours, you name it, all over the world in over 70 countries I've done so far. And whilst doing some of the historical tours, I was very fortunate because I have a real passion for history in general anyway, especially that of World War II, but generically all history. And when we did tours in certain places, such as all five of the Normandy D-Day their landing beaches, for example, in France, the El Alamein battlefields in North Africa and Egypt. And when I was very fortunate to be working on the famous QE2, and we were in Hawaii, and I did the Pearl Harbor tour at Pearl Harbor as well, I started to meet a lot of World War II veterans from all sorts of, you know, countries and backgrounds. And it was a beautiful connection with history to be stood there somewhere of real historical prominence and interest with people who lived through those historical times and moments in World War II battles and so forth. And to be there, we were essentially were the last of the last. Yeah. And, you know, I was even then, and that was many, quite some years ago, I was talking to them, they were in their late 80s, early 90s, and I thought, my God, we don't have much time left to get these precious, precious stories before they're lost forever. And that inspiration from talking to them firsthand and connecting with that history really inspired me greatly to want to come home and do something about it. And then when I thought, well, what can I do? I thought, well, I could come back, make it my mission to go all over the United Kingdom as best possible to collect as many stories as possible in both video, photographic and verbal formats to capture them, and after that, hopefully put them into book or books and get them out in the public domain so that we have something there for history, for posterity, for future generations, and still to thank them while the few, and they're becoming fewer all the time, are still with us. So that mix of inspiration led to me coming back, actually having to finish my beautiful job in tourism. It was quite beautiful. And but
probably just as well you did that now. It's probably not the greatest industry to be in right now, that's for sure.
Oh, do you know, you're absolutely right. Everything for a reason. I just had to come home, take on a different kind of work for an income whilst pursuing the passion to capture the stories in order to do this before it's too late, because the rate at which we're losing these precious veterans is mind-boggling. It's frightening. And that, again, is behind the inspiration to continue that push now, because we don't have long left to capture these precious stories.
And I completely agree with you, Gary, you know, having interviewed, I haven't actually interviewed any World War II veterans, but certainly present day veterans and what they've done. It's tugged at my heartstrings and it's ignited a passion within me. Why do you think it's so important for us to capture those memories now, you know, at this moment? Don't you think, for example, the history books would be able to fill us in what happens? I mean, you know, I can just ask Alexa, you know, what happened in World War II, and she's probably, she'll spout out and tell me what happened. Why is it, why do you think it's so important to capture it from their actual...
Because it's one thing hearing it from a machine, it's another thing hearing it from the individuals who are out there, who experienced it, who went through the trauma of it, who went through the passion of it, who went through the sacrifice involved in order to actually win the battles that essentially won the war against one of the greatest evils ever known, and certainly in modern history. And while, once again, we have that last link to that history before it disappears over the horizon of living history, that we need to do this. It's so important now for those reasons. We don't have long left to do it. And if people hadn't done it previously, let's look at something, for example, those few people who saw the last of World War One veterans disappearing. Yeah. And that was only 10 years ago. Harry Patch, the last World War II Tommy, only 10 years ago he died. So it's that quick. And in less than 10 years now, we're going to have none of World War II veterans left. I think
it's such an important point, and I don't think people will actually realise, you know, I'm of a generation, you're of a generation where our parents were born in the war or just after the war. Mm. Our parents were directly the offspring of those that fought in the war or were around in the war time, whatever they did. And literally, I guess with us, really goes the sort of the bloodline will continue, but the actual memories, you know, I remember my grandma and grandpa talking about the World War II. I remember my grandma reciting poetry from those times and talking about grandpa when he was in the Navy. And that had a massive impression on me as a little girl. And obviously our children won't have that memory.
That's right. And it is something I focus on, and I've written it in the first book and have done in the second one, which I'm nearly completing now, is the importance of connecting with history, because it is the last chance now. And if we don't capture it, if people hadn't done this previously, as I say, when they got clued up to it, just when they realized the last of World War I people were going, then there'd be nothing there now for anyone to access and see in the living sense of those people and them in their own words and own expressions and through their own emotions, being able to impart that to us, which you can only get firsthand and through what's captured on video, etc. If that wasn't there, then, and there weren't people like me going around doing this, the history quite simply would be lost forever. And that is the essence and importance of doing it while we can, because we haven't got one left. And it's beautiful, it's important. 50% of the interviews I do, and it really is 50%, are people who now in their mid to late 90s, but for the first time ever, they've not spoken of it in over 7 decades, nearly 8 decades.
And because that's quite something, and I read some of your reviews of the book, and the book is called The Last Heroes. It's behind Gary, if anyone, for people that are watching.
Yes.
And to be honest, you know, I know it's selling through Amazon, and I went and I looked through the review list, and all of the reviews are amazing. You know, you've got 5 stars right the way through, and I'd really recommend anyone to read it. I haven't read it myself. I'm looking forward to my signed copy of the book, so I'll read it. But a couple of things that really touched me is people said that you really got to the heart of the veterans, and you were able to open up to them, and they were able to speak to you as though they were your friend. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you managed to do that?
Yeah, certainly. I'd always try to make sure, in order to have and maintain a human connection, to not just turn up as a cold call, which you couldn't do anyway, obviously, because you require for privacy law and permissions and so on, but consciously, I want them to be at ease as best they can to make it the best interview possible. So part of that, prior to actually going to an interview, is I have a number of phone conversations and mini interviews with them to actually get together as much information as possible prior to me physically being in front of them and filming them. Because by then, they would have spoken to me a lot, they would have relaxed, we would have had laughter on the phone together, we would have shared moments, there would have, it was even, you know, very touching moments that of things that have come up. And as I say, 50% of the people I interview had never been interviewed before, so it's quite important.
And were you actually evoking, some of the things that I were reading were that a lot of the veterans were actually moved to tears when they were talking about seeing their comrades, their friends dying, and you know, obviously they lived through it. They're one of the survivors. But they might have been survivors out of 26 out of a whole platoon or whatever, and they watched their friends die, and they still remembered it with such detail and emotion.
Absolutely, because I remember we touched on this when we spoke on the phone the other day. The way we're hotwired as human beings is that, of course, those things in the long-term memory seem to be more etched in the mind and are easier to retrieve, especially if there's something of such a traumatic or historical or big nature, as opposed to things like, that we had, say, had for breakfast 2 weeks ago on a Thursday, which you probably won't remember. And when you've seen something as traumatic as, you know, I've interviewed D-Day veterans who, when they were thrown onto the beaches at Normandy, like at the opening scenes of Saving Private Ryan, these kids were 17, 18, 19 years of age. You wouldn't even have someone who got up from behind a computer these days at that age. They wouldn't know what it was like to be thrown into machine gun fire, watching the people around them being cut to pieces at the age of 18. It's just hard to fathom. And then they were doing it because they knew that it was the whole fate of their country and the Western world, and it's not being over dramatic, civilization as we knew it, was hanging in the balance because they were fighting one of the most ultimate evils known in modern history. So they were doing that and doing it as best they could, yet as they were doing it, in every living moment, they were seeing horrors around you, the likes of which you and I never seen unless we switch on the TV set, but then that's different than being there, obviously. And then you haven't got the human connection of the fact that they were seeing their friends being shot, killed, and cut to pieces around them. And, you know, it's only something like that that can really evoke such massive emotions, which, again, are things that you don't do interviews to make people upset, but things come up and come out that have been in the back there, the brain, for over 7 decades. It's important history. And every time one of our veterans, and it happens every single day, it will happen today while we're speaking right now, we are losing them every day. And every time one closes their eyes for the last time, if we don't have that history already captured, a wealth of personal and the nation's history dies with them every time they close their eyes for the last time. It's happening now as we speak. And that's another part of my mission. Capture as much as you can, because once it's gone forever.
And you call your mission your Debt of Gratitude Project. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes, Sonia. Yeah.
So tell me about that, why you chose that that title, which is obviously a lovely title, but the Debt of Gratitude.
Well, essentially, it's because that's what I believe we owe them. We can only have the freedom to have the conversation we're having right now, and any others we have in our every living day, because those that came before us fought against an oppression, what would have meant if it hadn't won, we wouldn't have the freedoms we have now. So I believe that we absolutely do owe them a debt of gratitude. So it's part of the title of my first book, A Debt of Gratitude to the Last Heroes, because essentially that encapsulates everything, the feeling, the idea, the project. And as a project name, Debt of Gratitude Project, it's because I genuinely believe this is what we owe them. And to tell them that before they go, wonderful. If we can't do that, and we can't do the stories, and it's happened a number of times, they passed away before they've gone into print, at least they know their stories have been captured, and their families, they love the fact that their loved ones have their stories told, because in a lot of cases, the families themselves didn't even know half of what their loved ones went through. And when I was at their homes conducting these interviews with family members sat behind me, the family members were moved to tears. They didn't realize what dad and granddad had gone through and the horrors they'd seen. And without that, we wouldn't have the freedom to have these conversations that we have now.
You think a lot of the veterans had kept a lot of these memories bottled up. And I know, speaking to veterans today, present day veterans, a lot of them have suffered with post-traumatic stress disorder, mental health issues, depression. You think World War II veterans went through the same thing? Obviously, we're living in very different times now. And, you know, back then, I guess, well, even now, you know, men particularly don't talk about their emotions certainly as much as women do. Do you think they did suffer the same way as, say, veterans do today?
I think they suffered. And they probably even suffered more, because not taking anything for 1 second away from what any modern veterans have gone through, because that's equally in its own setting and right as traumatic. But you've got to remember, these people, first of all, 99% of them were conscripts because the country called them up. If you didn't volunteer, you were going anyway.
Yeah.
That was it. You were being conscripted, like it or not, whether you were male or female. And so these people went to war, they went through the traumas of war, and they were put there, whether they wanted to or not, and they had to actually put up with, go through and experience everything for that end goal of winning the war. But later, because these were very different times, they were essentially demobbed, given their last paycheck, given some civilian clothes in return for their army clothes, a handshake, thank you, you've done well for your country, now crack on with your life, happy days, on you go.
Yeah.
That was it. You imagine, there were no support networks. Very little was known, only after World War I a bit, about what they called shell shock, but it wasn't even, after World War II, gone into in great detail. More was known, but it wasn't like it is today, you know. There's help out there, there's charities out there, there's support out there in a huge way. Like a lot of the veterans said, we just had to get on with it, regardless of what we had, and we just had to learn our own coping mechanisms to put it in the back of our head, because a lot of it, and this is why many, as I say, 50% of who I've interviewed, haven't opened up about it in nearly 7 to 8 decades, because they put it back there and locked it up, because in a lot of cases, it is far too painful for them to deal with. And the only way they could have brought up families, got on with life, and done anything, is to have found a way to lock it away, because that's how they dealt with it. And that PTSD might manifest in other little ways.
Yeah.
I know people who were in prison camps, the Nazis, you know, prisoner of war camps, and even worse to a certain extent, those who are on the death railway in Burma on the River Kwai in the terrible Japanese camps, who came back having lost over half their body weight, having had horrific diseases, been beaten, slave labored. There's no way that cannot affect you. It's just a case of how you deal with it, and the fact that the coping mechanisms that you develop, and the simple fact that back in the day, those things weren't there to help you. You just had to get on with it, pal. That's what they said. And it comes up again and again in interviews. And it's, they are more aware themselves these days. This is why the other half of the interviews I do with people who are used to speaking regularly did it actually as their form of dealing with it.
Yeah.
Because speaking, it was a form of self-therapy.
No, and I agree, and speaking to a lot of present-day veterans as well, now on the speaking stage, and you know, they've done amazing things. Not only have they served our country, but they're serving again to instill a very positive attitude and a can-do attitude to people that they're speaking to, going back to their own experiences. And you know, that's what I think is absolutely astounding.
I agree with you, it's amazing.
And just touching on what you said, because you have interviewed a few, what I'd say, I mean, all veterans should be recognised, but you've interviewed some very famous veterans. Can you tell me a little bit about those that have been in the spotlight?
Yeah, first of all, I was very fortunate to have been blessed with knowing and cooperating with Dame Vera Lynn, our national treasure, recently passed.
And she only passed, literally, this is so recent, on the 18th of June of this year.
Yes.
And yet she stood up and talked about the current pandemic, the COVID pandemic we're going through, and drew a parallel with, obviously, what she will do. And, you know, that I thought was astounding in itself.
Well, once again, that wartime generation has stepped up in a time of national crisis, proving that this is the generation that won World War II, and you can see why. Because you have people like Dame Vera Lynn saying and helping the nation with her words of comfort in a difficult time during the pandemic. You have the Queen stepping up and even quoting Dame Vera Lynn as part of her We'll Meet Again in her speech. You've got Tom Moore, who's raised over 30 plus million for NHS charities, bless him.
And what an amazing man, you know, there he is, late 90s, walking around his garden to raise money for
pandemic.
And yet, you know, he served, 75 years ago? And yet, and serving again. And that to me was, you know, I know it's touched, you know, our country and touched the nation, and quite rightly so, he got his knighthood. That.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it shows the nature and it shows the kind of people of that generation, which is why they were known as the greatest generation. It wasn't by chance, it's for a reason. And that greatest generation have proved, those that are left of them, that they can still stand up, be counted, and regardless of age, be still part of helping this generation in a time of national crisis, because we as a generation have not known anything like it with having to pull together in the same way as the wartime generation did, which is natural for them to stand up and do what they're doing, because they've known times that we've never known, where they as an entire nation, for the benefit and the greater good, had to come together in order to win a war and just survive. And theirs lasted 6 years. We're only 6 months plus into our conflict and into our hard time. They were 6 years, can you imagine? And so,
I can't as imagine a result 6 years of lockdown, definitely not.
Exactly. And we're 6 months in, or just over. They were having to do this for six solid years with, at times, no end in sight whatsoever. In grim times where not only were the people having to put up with going to battlefields and seeing horrific things, but even on the home front where we were being bombed relentlessly by the German Air Force and so on, the civilians as well. To give you an idea of some figures, I'll give you a quote of three figures. First of all, civilian casualties, World War II, of which the majority were as a result of direct enemy action and bombing. 70,000 approximately died. It's mind-boggling. Who were bombed out of their homes and killed. Of the armed forces, the British armed forces went to war.
You're just talking about Britain now, aren't you? Yes.
Yes, yes.
So everyone knows.
Just using that as a focus because we're talking about British veterans. But of those that went to war in the armed forces, Army, Navy, Air Force, etc., 380,000 did not come back. And in the Air Force alone, in Bomber Command, just one branch of one service, which had one of the highest attrition rates, 55,573 young men never came back and died for us.
And you
that's why we owe them a debt of gratitude.
And I know you have a case study of one of them in the book where he actually survived. He was doing the bombing runs and yet he had the greatest sport history of surviving, and he kept going and he kept going. Who was that? Do you remember?
I have a few actually, but what's interesting, I'll give one example. Johnny Johnson, George Johnny Johnson, the last British dam buster.
God bless him.
He is, bless
him. The last dam buster, is that right? He's the last?
That's absolutely correct, yes. And I ring up Johnny and I speak to him.
And just for those that are watching this and thinking, what does the last dam buster mean? Do you want to give us a little quick précis on what that meant?
Yeah, certainly. So,
because I am aware there are probably people that are watching this that maybe not quite our age and maybe not as familiar of World War II history as we are.
Well, not a problem, because as a guest historian, I actually do features in different places. So that one for one example. So the dam's raid was called Operation Chastise. It was undertaken by 617 Squadron of the British Bomber Command. And it was a special mission to hit three main dams, which provided the electricity in the rural area, the industrial area of northern Germany. And the idea was, if they could cripple or take out the dams, they could have a significant delay or effect on the German capacity to manufacture arms. So this was undertaken on the night of the 16th to the 17th of May, 1943. And they managed to knock out two of the three dams and damage the third. which did have quite a significant effect on Germany's capacity to, you know, manufacture. It didn't knock out the whole armaments industry at all. But in that mission, they had 50% losses. And of all those who survived, our last British dam buster is George Johnny Johnson, who now lives in Bristol. And he's a wonderful gentleman, very coherent, very switched on, still does public speaking. But it's now become part of military mythology almost. It's that kind of sacred that, because the dam busters were the feature of films over the years.
Yes.
They were, become a stuff of legend, you know? Stuff that kids grew up on as well back in the day, but now has become of real historical interest as well. So on top of all that, there's Johnny, last British one, and bless him, he's still with us and is a fantastic gentleman. I speak to him occasionally on the phone, ring up to see how he's doing. Lovely man. He's known for that one mission more than any, but what people don't realise is he actually flew 50 missions, 50, over occupied Europe under the most horrendous anti-aircraft fire, German attacks from attack aircraft, losses, prolific losses of again their friends watching burning aircraft going down, knowing their friends were in there dying at that moment. You know, all those things that you'd never imagine. He said once, you know, you'd come home from missions and you'd know how many had died, because when you went back to the place where all the beds were and many of the beds were empty, they were your friends that were coming back, and that's when it really hit home. It's hard enough for us.
It must have been,
one friend in our life.
Exactly. Like you say, you know, for us to lose anybody in our life is a major watch that sort of. Your friends die in that capacity must have been horrendous. Gary, you
absolutely.
Am I right in saying on the first book, The Last Heroes, you had 43 interviews, and you've just actually released a second edition to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the Battle of Britain.
That's correct. We're very fortunate this year to have a lot of key anniversaries of World War II. And, you know, a number have come and gone, as you know, VE Day in May, 75 years, VJ Day in August, 75 years. And so when this second edition was coming out, I'll start by showing you the first edition.
Yeah.
There we are. First edition in hardback.
And that's a foreword by Dame, that actually has got a foreword by Dame Vera Lynn.
Yes, it has, yes. I was very fortunate to have Dame Vera Lynn on board with me. She did the foreword for the book, Lesser. And that foreword is still in the new edition, which came out this week to commemorate the 80th anniversary. And essentially, as a parting gift from Dame Vera, before I hold this one up, the new one, I asked her not long before, obviously not knowing she was going to pass, could she please do me a validation for the front of the second edition, because her original foreword will still be in it. And she got that to me almost like a parting farewell. That's how I see it. It was a lovely kind of thing, emotional thing. It was her saying thank you and goodbye, because she's always been passionate about veterans herself.
Yes.
And there we are. And she's done. Let me put the reading glasses on. The forward there, which says a wonderful tribute to our World War II servicemen and women. Very well written, with real compassion and understanding. That was Dame Vera Lynn's parting gift to me. God bless her. And there it is on the front of the new edition, which has come out only this week.
Now, at this point,
so there's the last edition. There's a new one. So we've got the hardback, the softback, the digital download, and we can talk more about the other thing later, which was the audio download. But
I was just going to say, at this point, it makes sense. If anyone wants to get a copy of that book, how would they go about that? It's on Amazon, right? And I will put the link to the book in the show notes. But is there a way they could get a special signed copy from you, for example?
Absolutely. My Facebook page is running under exactly the same name as the books. So if you go to a search for a Facebook page that says A Debt of Gratitude to the Last Heroes, with the full title, A Debt of Gratitude to the Last Heroes, and then also put in my name, Gary Brixton Daly, if he doesn't come up immediately, then through that, you'll get the link to my page. Please connect, make a friend request, and you can request directly from me that we can get a book out to you, which I can personally sign to you if you wish, to make it very special and very personalized to you or anyone else. So it's a lovely thing to have for historical purposes, and also makes a great present for anyone else that you know may enjoy such things.
That's fantastic. Now, Gary, it can't have been the easiest thing tracking down the World War II, your World War II veterans. Can you tell me some of the challenges that you faced in writing this book?
Yeah, quite a few. First of all, when I first started out, of course, I wasn't known. My work wasn't known. There wasn't a book out there. So
since then, you've met Prince Charles, so we know you're quite well known now.
Oh, yeah. Prince Charles, Theresa May, all the heads of state. Famous World War II folks such as Dame Vera Lynn, George Johnny Johnson, Tom Neal, who was one of the highest Battle of Britain fighter pilot aces, Air Commodore Sir Charles, or Charles Clark, I should say, who, apart from being shot down in World War II in the Lancaster, survived and immediately was taken to Stalag Luft 3, which was a huge camp for airmen in Germany. And then, upon arrival, within a week of arriving, was part of the Great Escape. And then having...
what a good film that is. And everyone knows the Great Escape, right? Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up on Netflix for tomorrow.
Brilliant. Well, he was helping in that Great Escape. After that, he went on, having survived that, he went on to be part of what was called the Long March, or the Death March, which was at the end of World War II, the early part of 1945. The Germans were marching over hundreds of miles in minus 30 degrees from Poland, Czechoslovakia, and elsewhere, all their POWs back into Germany to get them away from the advancing Russians. And essentially, along the way, if anyone was to fall, they were left or shot on the spot. And they were there just in no winter clothing, with virtually no food, walking up to hundreds of miles under the most horrific conditions. And he survived that as well. And even up until in his mid-90s, only last year, was going back to Poland for the commemoration of it every February, so it'd be really cold still, that time of year in Poland, and taking part in the last part of walking it with modern-day RAF personnel to keep the awareness alive as the last surviving person of the Death March. And he was still doing it in his 90s. These are the people I'm honoured to meet and be, you know, to acquaint with. And back to your question about how did I find them, were the challenges? Oh my goodness. So first of all, when I wasn't known, I was putting out advertisements in the media to get people to come forward who were happy to be interviewed for a book or books. I was going to Broughton House for ex-servicemen, which is very close to where I live now, and beginning interviews there. And then I was contacting veterans-related charities and organizations and associations to see who they could put me in touch with. As my work became more built up and known, and the fact that I was going around interviewing all these veterans, it's now come to the point where, as a published author, and with over 100 interviews behind me, which I've conducted all over the UK, I now have people contacting me, giving me people.
Gary, I mean, you're saying this, and you're very humble in what you're doing, because you're self-funding this whole project yourself. That must be a challenge in its own right.
That's only part of the challenge. I'm happy you touched on that, because I've used all my savings to boot, over £10,000 of my own money, which, in all fairness, I knew was something that may happen. It's the risk I was willing to take in order to actually, in the belief of what I was doing, it's still there, in order to undertake this project and keep the Debt of Gratitude project going. Because the higher thing is to honor these people. I mean, the mantra which I've written, and it's my mission statement, it's on the back of my book, and it's very important, is that everything I do, it's about veterans. It's for veterans. It's to honor veterans, because to remember is to honor. That's my belief, that's my mission statement, that's my mantra.
And Gary, that's wonderful. I know you also raise money for veteran charities as well. And I just want to say, as somebody that is very passionate about veterans and what they do and how they serve, you are also serving. So I'd like to say thank you to you. you're doing an amazing, amazing job. And it's not finishing there, is it? Tell me about the future. Tell me what you've got in store.
Right. Well, with the charities, for example, I'm linked to a lot of charities, associations and organisations which are related to veterans and veterans work and supporting veterans in many different ways. For example, on the back of my first book, I have 17 of them who, because of my work with veterans and our shared passion in helping veterans, they've given their logo validations on the back of my book. And it's as widespread as Dame Vera Lynn's own charity, her children's charity. We've got the Gurkha Peace Foundation, of which Joanna Lumley won the Gurkha Rights. I'm involved there. The Sikh Foundation for Sikh and Indian veterans. The Jewish Foundation for ex-servicemen and ex-servicewomen. Polish ex-servicemen. We've got, oh my goodness, the Battle of Britain. We've got recognized Black heritage and culture, because my work has expanded to represent all of them, and they're all in the book as well. I have purposely made sure I have veterans from England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, those who are in Army, Navy, Air Force, Intelligence Services, Special Forces, and Homefront organizations. I made sure that people, very important, who came thousands of miles to help us in our country's darkest hours of need are also remembered. Very important.
From the Commonwealth as well, right?
Absolutely. I've made sure they're there. On the front of the book, Sam King, West Indian Jamaican. I've got West Indian Jamaican veterans in the book. I've made sure in there I've got Nepalese, like the Nepalese Gurkhas, the famous Gurkhas. I've got Sikh Indians. I've got Polish. I've got Canadian veterans. I've even got German Jewish refugees who came to help and ended up in the British Army, alongside all of our own. And especially at a time like this, in a multicultural Britain, and where so many things are going on, my personal mission from the beginning has been to represent as widely as possible all those veterans from all services, backgrounds and cultures who have come to help and be a part of our country and fighting for our country's freedom and maintaining the democracy and the liberty which we to this very day are benefiting from as a result of their actions, hence them all being in there and having the backing from all those different kinds of associations and charities. As far as my charity work goes as well, it's extended to doing a lot with the Royal British Legion. Every year, as part of their very famous annual poppy campaign, I was part of the Manchester part of that on the poppy bus. And in one day, the Manchester side alone, within 8 hours, every year we have managed to raise for veterans-related causes over £30,000 in 8 hours every year.
That's fantastic. That's great, Gary. That's great. And you're writing a second book, is that right?
I am, yeah. The second book, the follow-up obviously to this, it's got, again, more of the veterans' stories in there. I'm projecting, hoping it'll be out by the end of this year. But the present climate as it is, let's see what happens. These are strange times we're living in. Let's see what happens. And it will have further, I assume, about 40 veterans plus other veterans-related stories and things of interest in there. And The opening story will be of Dame Verilyn herself. She did the forward for the first one. It's actually her life story, especially now she's passed, that is the opener for the second one. Again, a continuation of continuity of other veterans. Johnny Johnson has done a validation. He's not in his story, he's not in the second book, but he's done a validation from a second. And there's a lot more poetry in there as well. Poetry of mine, because another aspect of my tribute to veterans is that I write and perform a lot of veterans-related poetry, remembrance events.
The poem actually in the introduction is your poem. And we should say that. So the introduction to the interview is you reciting a beautiful poem.
Thank you. That's very kind of you, Sonia.
I've got to say, we've come very close to the end of our interview, but what I'd love to ask you, and this is a question I ask to all my guests, and that is, if you were to write a message in a bottle for future generations to find, what would that message be?
Well, I was thinking about that when you gave me that question the other day, and essentially it would be this. Taking into account, you're talking about future generations, and in this case, the link to past generations, so therefore the continuation of time. So it would be this. Live for the present, think for the future, treasure the past, and remember to honor and thank those who, through their sacrifices, gave all they had in their past to give you a better present and a better future.
Gary,
that would be.
That's fantastic, and that says it all. Thank you so much. You've been a wonderful guest, and I can't wait to read your book.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday, so hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.